Well, welcome to another exciting issue of the Launch Hour. This is Ron Reardon with our producer, Lee Cantor. Jim DeBetta is on vacation today. And we have a very exciting guest here. It's Chris Schutte. And Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ron.
Okay. You are the inventor of the Hot Dog Easy Bun Steamer. How did you know that you first wanted to be an inventor?
Well, I think as a small child, I always had the fantasy of being an inventor. Actually, always thought I would invent some simple little gadget that...
Involving hot dogs?
No, not necessarily involving hot dogs, but I just always had the instinct that I was going to invent some simple little gadget and bring it out to the masses.
And what are any childhood little forays you had?
Oh, I think as children, we always dream of inventing the next big wheel or skates. I think early on, I thought of the idea of inline skates and saw them in the store one day and said, wow, somebody else had my same idea.
Yeah. Now, I've seen studies in the past that, there are people that are hot dog people and people that are hamburger people. And then there's those rare folks that are in between that like both hot dogs and hamburgers. Have you done any research on that?
No, I haven't done any research specifically on whether you're a hot dog person or a hamburger person, but I did find out through my research that hot dogs are the number one food consumed in America.
Well, I knew it's kind of like, you know, baseball, apple pie, and hot dogs.
That's what America is all about. Actually heard one time that the hot dogs purchased in baseball stadiums would stretch from Los Angeles to Boston each and every season if they were placed end to end.
That's a lot of hot dogs.
That's a lot of hot dogs.
Do you know any of the history, like why the hot dog became the baseball food item?
Well, it started actually in the Northeast, in the New York and Boston area. Hot dogs were served by a local deli up there, and they were originally called Red Hots. And they would take them to the hot dog. They would buy them on the way into the baseball games, and somebody came up with the bright idea of serving them at the baseball games or walking throughout the audience and throwing hot dogs. Get your Red Hots.
How about that? I did not know that. You know, I'm a real trivia buff, and when I mentioned that there's hot dog people and hamburger people, they actually did a correlation with men as to whether or not they wore briefs or the what's the opposite?
Boxers.
Or boxers. Okay, briefs or boxers. And they found that the people that wear boxers are more likely to be hot dog fans, and the people that wear briefs are more likely to be hamburger fans.
Really? I'm not sure what the correlation is.
Or maybe you can do a tie-in with your product. With
absolutely.
Boxers.
Well, one of my taglines is, kiss your stale buns goodbye.
There you go.
Hey, that would tie in. That would be
How about
good.
You chat a little bit about and describe your product? Since we're on the radio, it's hard to see it, but why don't you just walk us through what it is and what makes it so special?
Well, maybe I'll go back to how I actually came up with the idea. I always enjoyed the hot dogs that you get at sporting events and stadiums, and enjoyed making hot dogs at home, and one Monday night I made myself a really nice hot dog. I had stopped at the store and picked up a pack of fresh buns and put that dog in the water and boiled it on the stovetop during halftime, and really had a great hot dog. And a few days later, Sunday football came around, and I said, oh, I want another one of those hot dogs I had Monday night. That was really good, and proceeded to make myself another hot dog and was really disappointed in the way the hot dog tasted. And I thought to myself, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference was the buns were 6 days old.
Oh.
And it's funny, I remember growing up, my mother, I was raised by a single mother, always on a budget, and she froze everything. Everything she made, she froze. I think I was 18 before I had my first fresh bun because it was always frozen.
It went right into the freezer?
Went right into the freezer.
Because that stops time.
That does. It does. It absolutely stops time. But what she would do is she would take out these freezer-burned rolls, and she'd place them in this little dome steamer and bring them right back to life. It was an amazing process. It was just about like a magic
show. How did that work? Like you would just... Where it goes over the stove? I've never seen that before.
Well, it's funny. These were like really common in the 50s and 60s. It looks like a little UFO.
Uh-huh.
It's a clamshell dome item that you put just a tablespoon or two of water in the bottom. You put the buns in. You put it on your stovetop, and it causes the steam to circulate and refresh and rejuvenate the bun.
Wow.
And I sat there that Sunday where I was having that hot dog. I said, well, my mom could make a six-month-old frozen bun taste like it just came from the bakery. This thing's 6 days old, and it tastes like it belongs in the garbage. What's up?
Right.
And then it hit me. I'm already boiling the hot dog in a pot of water. Why can't I do the same thing and steam the bun at the same time? So first thing I did was I grabbed a cheese grater, and I popped it up on top of the pot, and I tried to steam the bun that way. And I got marginal results, mostly because you have hot, dry air going up on the outside of the pot, and I really wasn't getting a circulating effect with the steam.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to come up with something that would drop the bun into the pot where I could get the lid back on so the steam would circulate.
But not into the water.
But not into the water. Yeah, right. It drops about halfway down into most pots. And I created this little grill that dropped in there. It hung on the sides of the pots, and it worked really well. But when I pulled the bun out, I looked down, and I really couldn't get to my hot dog.
Oh, right.
And that's when I kind of had my aha moment. You know, they always talk about the inventor having the aha moment. And I thought to myself, I said, if I had a cross-shaped opening in that grill, I could reach through with a pair of tongs, and I could pluck out my hot dog.
So the hot dog just sits at the bottom of the pot.
The hot dog just sits at the bottom of the pot. This little round grill that looks like a little Weber barbecue grill grate just drops right in the pot. It has adjustable handles, so it works with different size pots. The handles are curved back on themselves, so the lid can go back on, so you can get that circulating effect.
That's important. That's critical.
That's critical to getting a good steaming effect, is to get the lid back on so the steam circulates. And then when you're ready to pull out your hot dog from below, you can reach through the cross-shaped opening with your tongs and pluck the hot dog out. And what you have is a simple little inexpensive grate that folds up, works with any pot, and always produces a great hot dog. I've actually tested it with buns up to 3 or 4 weeks old, and it'll bring them right back to like
you just bought. So 3 or 4 weeks just sitting out on the counter?
Sitting out on the shelf. As long as there's no mold on it, you can make it like it was brand new. It's good to go.
That's unbelievable. And as you've gotten feedback from folks, are they using your grill for anything other than hot dogs?
Well, it's really interesting. I took the grill to the International Houseware Show in Chicago a couple of years ago, and actually was picked up on the local Chicago news channel.
Yeah, that's a good fit, Chicago, hot dogs.
That's exactly right. That's why they picked me up. It's a hot dog town. But the feedback I got from the people at the show was, geez, you can only fit 2 or 3 buns on this grill at any given time. You need to make a bigger grill so you
can... Like for a lobster pot.
Well, actually, that's what turned out what they were doing with it. So I made a bigger grill so you could get 5 or 6 buns on it. It would go in a large stock pot. And all of a sudden, I started hearing from my customers that we're steaming lobsters on it, crab legs, and we're steaming tortillas and salmon, and all kinds of different steaming applications came into play.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great. So then that was the unintended consequence.
The unintended consequence is I'm currently almost developing two different diverging products at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because with the lobster and the salmon, didn't they need to also get the butter heated up?
That's right. When the smaller unit has a cross-shaped opening, because that's ideal for reaching through with a set of tongs, but the large one has a keyhole opening, because the keyhole opening holds a dish so that you can melt butter or heat up Alfredo sauce, and it also gives you a little bit more steaming area on the grill.
And then, so it's easy to get in there and grab whatever you need. This device holds things, you know, separate enough where you're not going to burn your hand.
Yeah, well, actually, the bigger one, because of the way you load it in and out of the pot, I'm putting heat-treated materials on the handle so you can pick it up without having to get oven mitts on or gloves or something like that.
Okay. Now, I've got a really tough question for you. It's right up there with, you know, what's the secret of life? It's something that I've been asking myself ever since I was a teenager, is that I would notice that when I bought a pack of buns and I bought a pack of hot dogs, that the numbers didn't match. Is that still true? That the number of buns does not match the number of hot dogs, and you have to end up buying more of one of the other?
That's true. There's usually 8 buns in a pack of hot dog buns,
right?
And there's usually 10 dogs in a bag.
Yeah, whose idea was that? They can't get on the same page.
I don't know. I think it's a conspiracy against the hot dog manufacturers.
You think?
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, since the numbers don't match, you know, there's going to be two dogs with no buns.
Right, okay? Or you got to buy a whole other package of buns.
Yeah. I think it's a way to keep you addicted, because you're either out of dogs and you got leftover buns, you got to buy some more dogs, or you're out of buns and you got to buy some more buns because you got leftover dogs.
Well, you know what? Maybe this contributes to why this is the number one food. Maybe this strategy is really behind it all.
It could be. It could very well be.
I think so.
Yeah. So, Chris, what does it really take to be an inventor?
You know, Ron, it's funny. The last 2 years have been such a learning process for me. Even though I've always dreamed of being an inventor, I always wanted to be an inventor. Actually, going through the process, I've learned so much. All my life, I really found myself to be kind of a jack of all trades. And at some points in my life, I found that to be really beneficial. And other points, I felt like it held me back in my career. But I think to be a real effective inventor nowadays, you really need to be a jack of all trades.
Mm-hmm. You have to have at least some knowledge about pretty much everything.
I think you do. I did my own prototyping. I built my original designs in my garage and in my backyard with a pair of pliers and wire snippers. I've done my own brochures. I did my own market research. One of the things we did early on, we were looking for an audience to test market this thing. I took it to local fire stations and cooked free hot dogs for the on-duty firemen to get their opinion. And, hey, what do you think about this little product? What should it sell for? What do I need to change? How would you suggest marketing it? And
what did you learn from the firemen?
I learned that some firemen like hot dogs pretty well.
A lot.
I had one guy eat four hot dogs in the afternoon before I had to cut them off.
It's like, hey, you know, I need some more advice if you're going to eat that much. So did you change your product based on their input?
No, but it pointed out early on that my biggest challenge was going to be explain it to somebody what it does. If I had one, and I do have one in my bag, and I was to hand it to you and ask you what it was, you'd have no idea what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I took it to a SCORE meeting one time, and SCORE is a great resource for inventors out there. And I passed it around a table, at lunch table. I said, tell me, what do you think this device is? And nobody could figure out what it was, even after I played hot and cold with them.
Right.
So
you knew it was a complex sale, so it needed some sort of demonstration in order to kind of illustrate how it works?
Absolutely. It's highly demonstrable. It works really well as a demonstrated product, and the results are always fantastic. The challenge is, how do you translate that to a product that hangs on a hook in a store?
Right. So how did you do that?
Well, I'll let you know when I've got it down pat.
You're doing it.
I actually do think I've come up with the packaging needed to do it, we're hoping in the next few weeks to actually get it in some grocery stores hanging up next to the hot dogs and buns and see if the package doesn't communicate enough about what it does to get it to actually sell.
So are there any other marketing channels you're using to promote it right now?
Well, it's currently on my website, and I am selling it on eBay. And just a few weeks ago, it debuted on QVC.
What was that experience like?
You know, QVC is a world all to its own. It was an absolutely phenomenal experience to see how these people sell as effectively as they do. They really have it down to a science. Of course, it's a great publicity tool.
Sure.
To bring attention to your product. It's a great experience tool. And now when I call people or contact people about taking a look at this product, they take you a lot more seriously when you can say, well, it was on QVC 3 weeks ago, and I'm going to be back on next week.
Now, can you walk us through how you got on QVC? Because a lot of inventors would dream about that kind of opportunity.
Well, it's funny. They talk about networking and how important networking is. Well, when I went to the International Houseware Show in Chicago back in 2008, I had the opportunity to meet several different QVC agents. And a QVC agent is just a person who does exactly what it sounds. They're an agent between you and QVC and help you through the process. And so I knew that an agent could be beneficial to help open that door and make that initial contact. But actually, the three agents I met at the Houseware Show turned out to not be the connection I used.
That's funny.
As it turned out, a neighbor of my mother's who lived in her condo later went to work for QVC, and it was that connection that got me into QVC. So networking is so important to the inventing process. You just never know where that connection is going to be made.
It's really important, you know, who you know. Now, I saw when you were on QVC, I saw that, and it was what I considered to be.
You watched QVC, Ron?
I only watched it because I knew that Chris was going to be on there. Otherwise, no, I don't watch QVC. But I thought that your performance on there was flawless, and what really impressed me was, you know, the preparation and all the stuff they had out there. They had not only the hot dogs, but they had the lobsters right there. The salmon was there. The tortillas was there. I mean, it was everything was ready for you to demonstrate and all like that. I understand that you had to go to school on how to be a QVC presenter. Is that true?
That's true. They actually have a class, and they require you to be certified before QVC will put you on the air. They want to make sure you understand their selling philosophy, that you know which camera to look in, that you understand the process, how they wire you up. And to speak to how well that food was prepared, they actually have a half a dozen chefs that work on the premise that I hired one of them to be what's called a food stylist, and they actually prepare all that food and have it ready for you when you come in, and they wheel it in on a cart and a table, and away you go. Yeah.
So it runs like a machine, that place?
It's extremely well-run machine. There's a reason why they're the number one television shopping channel out there.
Yeah, and as I remember, you had sliders on there too, did you not?
I had sliders, yeah. A lot of people don't realize those little burgers that we buy in the sack and Americans love so much that the secret to them is not that they're small and they're square. The secret is that the buns are steamed.
Wow.
That's really something. And the first prototype that you made, was that the one that you went to market with, or were there other prototypes in between?
No, the product actually evolved. The original product that I made worked on one particular pot that I had, and it just so happened that the lid went back on. But as I started to test it on different pots, the design wasn't universal enough. So it's funny. I walk around with a tape measure going through most housewares departments measuring pots to try and figure out.
Oh, here's a new one. Now you got to make an adjustment.
Got to find out what the optimum size is. Right. And make sure that all the different style lids, I never realized there were so many different style lids to pots, but I found about 6 to 8 totally unique style lids to pots. And it's funny, a month before I headed off to Chicago, I had received my first manufactured prototype that wasn't handmade in my backyard, and it didn't work in all these different pots. And I said, I'm in trouble. I'm 6 weeks away from going to Chicago, and this thing works on one style of pot, and not the other 6 or 7 out there. So I actually flew out to where this was being manufactured in Texas. And it was a wonderful, old, established business that had been around since the 1800s. It started by twisting barbed wire.
Right.
And they're still making wire products. And I talked to one of the head engineers that had been working for the company 25 years. And I said, okay, this is what I need to do. I took these 6 different pot designs. I stuffed them in a suitcase.
And
I flew
out there.
I brought them there.
Make it fit in all these before I leave.
That's right. I said, it's exactly what happened. I said, I have to have a design that works in every one of these different lid styles. And I have to have it before I leave so that you can manufacture before I head to Chicago. And we were able to come up with one that worked.
That's unbelievable. Wow. Yeah, I was just thinking about you being, you know, in all the stores measuring the pots and everything. I was wondering if security's reviewing the tape. They're like, what is this guy doing?
Right. He's spending a lot of time hanging on the housewares. He doesn't look like a houseware guy.
It's really scary when I take my little prototype and I pull it out of a backpack and I'm walking around sticking it in different pots. I'm always concerned that security's thinking that's something I'm removing from the store instead of something I brought in.
So that could be another marketing strategy.
So when did you know that that you had a winner with this particular invention?
I think I realized I had a winner when I first made my first hot dog with that cross-shaped opening. I mean, it's just a really good hot dog. It never disappoints. But the real kicker was when that fireman asked for the fourth hot dog.
You knew you had something.
I think when the fireman said, I'll have one more after he downed 3, I figured, you know what, I think I got something.
It's fireman approved.
It's fireman approved, absolutely.
Just need a testimonial from that fireman there. So, I think we've been through all the steps, have we not, of how you got where you were? Or was there anything left out?
Well, I think there's a couple along the way. Ron, I think one of the things that's most important for those inventors out there that are listening and inspiring to be an inventor is that they understand that this is just a slow, arduous process.
So it didn't happen last week when you started?
It still hasn't happened yet.
How long has the process, I mean, from a timing standpoint, from the aha to today?
Well, you know, a couple of key steps. The aha moment happened back in 2003.
Oh, so just a short, 6 years later?
Just a short.
Still in
the air
battling.
A short 6 years later. But you know what the key is? Is that I got laid off in 2007, and I had always been trying to work on this idea part-time.
Like on the side kind
of
thing.
On the side.
Right.
And I had one of those jobs that was 60, 65 hours a week,
right.
And there was nothing left at the end of the day or the
weekend.
Yeah,
you were too tired. You only have so much energy.
You only have so much energy, but you know what? Thank God I got laid off. Not once, but twice.
There. Thank God twice.
I got laid off twice.
And that helped you focus then?
It really did. It makes you reflect. You know, I'm not a spring chicken. A lot of people would say it's a midlife crisis. It makes you reflect on what you really want to do in life.
Right.
And when you have that kind of time to reflect and you realize, you know what I really want to do? What I really want to do is I want to invent a product and bring it to market. And I had the idea for it. I just had to have the perseverance to keep at it.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of people out there listening, you know, the inventors and the entrepreneurs, they always like to hear the successes and what you did right. Was there any mistakes that you made that maybe that you'd like to share?
Yeah, that someone could avoid. They can learn from you.
Well, I think there's always different mistakes that you come across. And I think the key is when you're doing this, don't rush. Take your time and think it through. Right now I'm working on a deal where the product's going to be test marketed in a bunch of grocery stores. And my original packaging that I had worked on for so long to put it in the store shelves got rejected by the distributor. And I had to go right back to the drawing board. And they got rejected because it was too big, okay, because I'm trying to hit what's called a J-hook market.
Right.
Okay. And my original packaging was too big. Well, I was getting really frustrated, and I almost went to production with this packaging.
That would have been not good.
That would have been a big mistake. And I think one of the things that really helps as a characteristic to have as an inventor is patience.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that sometimes it's better just to pull back and really reflect on things and take your time and be methodical rather than to race ahead. You know, we want that check. We want to get it to market. We want it to be successful. But on the same token, it can be very expensive when you make a mistake.
Right.
And when you're dealing with limited funds, and a lot of people go, wow, look at what you've done. Yeah, well, I've got over $55,000 into a silly little simple hot dog steamer.
Right.
And we still haven't seen, you know, the major profit come back yet.
Right.
That's unbelievable. And I know that most entrepreneurs and inventors have ups and downs. I know that one of the first inventor conferences I went to, I saw an inventor that invented a thing called the Exerciser. And he starts off his presentation by drawing a straight horizontal line. He says, this was my life before I invented anything. Nice and stable,
right.
No ups and downs. And then he does these lines that go way up and then way down and way up. And he says, and this was my life after I invented
it, right.
With these incredible highs and these incredible depressions. Now, when you went to Chicago, didn't you have a kind of a false start with people that were really interested and then it didn't turn out?
Oh, Ron, you are so true. You know, this is a point that I probably can't stress enough because I've been accused of this several times by people in my family. Why aren't you excited? You just got this phone call. You just got this news. And I've really learned to pace yourself, that it is a marathon. Ron, to your point, I did go to Chicago, and I did strike up a verbal handshake deal with a company. And I remember the owner of the company saying, you have really got something here. The biggest problem is I'm not going to be able to make you rich fast enough.
Right.
And I thought, wow.
That's
I,
it.
I
you
really
just won the lottery.
Zippity-doo-dah. Mm-hmm.
I won the lottery. I've got it down. And what happens so often is when you get caught up in the moment of the excitement of the show and the demonstration and you see all of the glitz and glamour that goes on at one of these events. And the Chicago International Houseware Show is the largest one in the world. I mean, it's absolutely huge. It fills up three or four Georgia Coliseum type venues.
Wow.
And, you know, I drove home from that thing just on cloud nine. And a few weeks later, I contacted this company owner. It's actually the owner of the company. And we got kind of a cold shoulder response. And I pursued it. And about 5 weeks later, I got the word back from the CEO that they decided to pass on this deal. That we basically had a handshake agreement at the show. And five weeks later, I was back to square one. So it was extremely frustrating, and it is, as Ron said, full of peaks and valleys.
Right. It's one of those things where in your head, because it was new to you, you're thinking you're spending the money a little bit in your own head, you know. And then reality comes, it's like you've lost the money. Like the money never changed hands, but in your head you've had it and then you've lost it. So it's really tough.
I could just imagine Chris coming back from Chicago saying, I'm in the money.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
in the money.
Yeah,
he thought he had it. It was done, right?
That's so true. And a similar thing happened with QVC. We got a phone call in February that QVC agreed to buy the units, and I went to their initial QVC training in April. And then in May, I heard that it was going to happen this year, that it would be next year. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, we think that it's too late for the summertime product.
Right.
And I said, well, this is not a summertime product. This is more a fall product because this is about cooking hot dogs on your stovetop.
Rather than your grill.
Rather than your grill. It's not an outdoor grill product, but there was some confusion there. So anyway, the deal was back on. And then my order got held up in customs. And we thought that this was going to create a major problem, that of all the containers coming into Long Beach
That's the
Harbor,
one they decided to
that's the
scrutinize.
One. That's the one that had to scrutinize, the one with the silly little round wired device.
Right, because they're going, what is this thing? We don't know what this is. They hadn't seen the QVC spot.
Then you go to QVC, and you're like, wow, this is it, right?
Right.
Well, it turns out I was on the day that Kennedy died.
Oh, wow.
And Senator Kennedy was
popular.
A relatively famous person.
Right.
And I think a couple of the news channels covered it for a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
A lot.
And I think it pulled into our sales a little bit. And
yeah.
So our sales weren't quite what we wanted. Fortunately, we're going to get another chance at it and going to go on again in a couple of weeks. But it's not just about what you sell on QVC. It's about the process and the publicity and everything else you got going on with the whole process.
Yeah, I think all the planets and all the stars have to align. You know, it's like, I grew up on a farm in West Tennessee, and you can have a situation where you've got a good crop and everything like that, and everything's looking good, and all of a sudden a hailstorm comes in, and that totally destroys your crop, you know, and it's just the hailstorm seems to be localized on just your farm and not all your neighbors, you know, so you can do everything right, and then all of a sudden, kaput, you know. So what advice do you have for inventors that are just starting out?
Yeah, this was your first invention to get this far, right?
This was my first invention that I actually took serious and made a commitment to. I had, over the years, had several other ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, just after I got laid off, I was in Home Depot, and I saw one of the ideas I had for a tool hanging on the shelf.
Wow. Oh, no.
And I said, you know what? That's the exact idea that I had 4 years ago, and here it is hanging on a shelf in Home Depot in the tool section. And I said, you know what? I'm not going to let that happen with the hot dog steamer.
So you decided to go all in.
I decided to go all in. I figured there was never going to be an easier product for me to try to bring to market than a simple little wire-made round hot dog steaming grill.
Right.
And, you know, I've heard that story so many times. You know, we had Saul Palter, the inventor of the Smart Spin, come speak at the Inventors Club here in Atlanta. And he started off by saying, I'm a failure. I mean, this is a guy that sold several million of the Smart Spin by the time he came and talked. And he talked about all the ideas that he had had over the years that he did nothing with. And the only one that I remember was putting wheels on garbage cans. He had that idea
That would catch on.
Yeah.
That would catch on.
He had the idea 10 years before one was on the market.
Wow.
10 years.
That's amazing.
All of his neighbors said, yeah, that'd be a good idea to have wheels on the garbage cans. And he didn't do anything with it because he was owner of a tire store and had children he was raising.
And a life. You know?
And then all of a sudden, here's the garbage can with wheels, you know. And he went through several other ideas that he had that he didn't pull the trigger on. And so finally, when he was retired, okay, he didn't have a job, and his kids were grown. He came up with the Smart Spin, which, you know, was a tremendous, tremendous success. But, yeah, that's very motivating when you see your idea that you didn't do on the shelf.
Or depressing. Motivating or depressing?
I don't know about depressing, Lee, but for me, I think that the day that I walk into my local grocery store and see my product hanging on the hook will be the day that I won't be able to contain my excitement.
Right. That's let it all out then.
That's the day.
Yeah, that ought to really be good. So any other advice that you have for inventors that are starting out?
I think that, and this is advice that I've read and heard from several different sources, but as you do the inventing process, what you want to do is never spend more money than what you need to get to the next step.
Mm-hmm.
I think people don't realize how much it costs to bring a product to life.
Right. That was probably something you didn't really foresee, how much money you were going to spend when you first started.
No, my original business plan, I laid it out at about $25,000, and we're over double that at this point. And
right.
I think, as people say, it costs twice as much and takes twice as long as you think.
That's pretty accurate.
So I think it's important that as you go along that you only spend money on what you need to do for the next step.
Right.
Yeah, because I think it's pretty common for inventors to really they have expectations that they think it's going to happen faster than it really does, and that it's going to cost less than it does. And they miss it by several multiples on both, that they say, oh, you know, 6 months I'll be rich. And it's many multiples more than 6 months. I mean, you started yours in what year?
Well, full-time since July of 2007, so it's over 2 years of basically my full-time occupation.
Yeah. And, you know, the old adage of it takes years to be an overnight success, you know, we all chuckle at that, but it's really true.
Right. It is. It is absolutely so true.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what's next for you?
Well, I'm hoping that this product becomes financially successful because we're not quite there. And then I have a couple of other ideas that I'd like to bring to life. But I think the first thing you got to do is start making a few dollars before you can afford to do the next thing.
So you can move to the next step.
Right? Yeah. It's really important to stay focused on the one idea that you've got before you diffuse your energy into other things. So how can people find you on the Internet?
Well, they can find me at hotdogeasybunsteamer.com.
And that's easy, the letters E and Z.
Actually, right? I bought both domain names and they forward. So mm-hmm. if you type in it
either way,
you're good to go. And right now I've actually entered a LegalZoom.com contest for looking for the next spokesperson.
Oh, nice.
For LegalZoom.com to be featured on one of their commercials. And I have a video on the LegalZoom.com rate video site.
And they can find that once they get to that site by your name or by the Hot Dog Easy Bun Steamer?
They can, surprisingly enough, there's only 5 pages there. And right now I'm on the 5th page. And you can find my name, Chris S., with the Hot Dog Easy Bun Steamer.
That's super.
That's cool.
Well, Chris, thanks for sharing your journey with us. I think it's really valuable for all the budding entrepreneurs out there to hear.
See how easy it is to be an overnight success, right?
That's right.
How many years it takes.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me today.
Okay. And this has been another exciting issue of the Launch Hour with Ron Reardon and Lee Cantor. And we'll have Jim DeBetta back next week.
Great.